Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
But dude averages 18 yards after catch.
We get it. When you're passionate about something, you go all in. You live entirely in that world. That's exactly how Graybar is about renewable energy projects.
He's all fourth quarter, such a sleeper.
Join our league of clean energy at Graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Lo Neal, Dan DeVoe filling in for Willard and Dibs on a Friday. Gorgeous Friday, by the way, here in San Francisco. We're all 49ers as they get ready for the Buffalo Bills. As the 49ers look to get back to the 500 mark. And still, hey, listen, you're only a game back in the NFC West. You're chasing Seattle as well as the Arizona Cardinals. Two good teams, but certainly I would think that the 49ers feel as though they are teams that they can catch and pass. And should that happen, and that's asking a lot, the 49ers then would be divisional champs. And what does that mean in terms of the playoff picture? You would have the number four seed. You'd be guaranteed to be at home for that first round, which most likely would be against Green Bay. We can get into the Packers because that is a very, very dangerous team that is very reminiscent to who they were last year when they put it into another gear right at about this time of the season. I want to get into Christian McCaffrey in just a bit, but the good news, obviously, is that Brock Purdy, as Kyle Shanahan stated earlier today, will be in uniform and will play for the San Francisco 49ers, meaning that he will start. However, on the other side of the ball, it is really concerning when you think of the number of injuries that are now beginning to stack up, Lo. So, once again, just to reiterate that Nick Bosa will not be able to go. Jordan Elliott is out in concussion protocol. You're obviously already without Hargrave. The two cornerbacks, Charvarius Ward, there's still some uncertainty as to whether he will come back. But D'Amador Lenore is not going to play on Sunday against the Buffalo Bills. You're obviously without Talon Ofunka. So now you're relying on Isaac Yiadom on one corner and then the kid Renardo Green on the other. So you're really stretched not only on that D-line, as we have talked about, that has been much maligned throughout this entire season, right. But now the secondary becomes a serious concern because of the injuries to your two starting cornerbacks.
Yeah, I'm just shocked because when you're talking about this defense and you're saying, okay, who is the Niners defense? Where they're at? How are they, you know, where do you rank this guy? Where do you rank these guys out? Listen, they're 11th against the pass. I mean, they're 6th against the pass and they're 11th against the run. So when you look at this Niners defense and you think about it and you look at their record, and I told you, hey, look, if I said, hey, 11th against the run, you would say, man, this team has got to be over 500. They should be a team top 10, you know, a pretty good team. And then you're 6th against the pass and pass defense, but your record does not show that. And the games that we saw and what we've seen, it doesn't merit that. And that's what's so weird because that's what people don't understand. Statistics can mean anything. Stats sometimes, and that's where you get in these analytics and those. Oh, yeah, well, they're 11th against the run. They're a top 10 teams against the run. They're a top 10 team against the pass. You should be like, hey, man, you're like, okay, we should be competing, but they're not. So I look at this team and I look at the team. It's optimistic, you know, especially on game day, that it's like, man, you see they're playing good against the run. And then when teams have to run the ball, they're able to run it. When team has to throw the ball and it's a crucial situation, they are giving it up. So it's really interesting to watch this team, the way it's performed, when you look at the numbers and where they're ranked. But when a game, it doesn't merit that.
Just to kind of go even deeper on what Lo just said, kind of interesting, they are ranked sixth in total defense, meaning yards allowed,
right,
that they've allowed from opponents, but they're 20th in points allowed.
That's the part.
That says a lot. Yeah. That says just about everything you need to know.
So you're at a top six defense in total, and you're 11th against the run, six against the pass, and top 10 defense total, but you're 20th against scoring. And that hurts.
One of the areas that is really problematic now is the secondary. And they're going to rely on some kids. Now, I think everybody would agree that this was a good draft. Renardo Green, Malik Mustafa, Dominic Pooney was a huge find in the third round for the 49ers. But typically, Lo, don't you want to work in your rookies and give them an opportunity to sort of get their feet wet? And while they show that they can, you know, they're NFL ready, you do not necessarily want them starting against Buffalo on the road when you're talking about Renardo Green having to rely on Malik Mustafa. I think ideally you like Talanoa Hufanga back there with the second-year player, Jair Brown, and giving Mustafa some run, who has clearly shown that he's a thumper in terms of run support. He's one of
Mustafa,
those guys.
He'll hit you. He'll hit you.
Every time you see somebody like that, and I don't mean to make the comparisons, he's not Ronnie Lott, and he's not going to be Ronnie Lott, but for 49er fans, you know what it is that I'm talking about. When you see somebody come from the safety position downhill like that,
yeah,
and meeting runners in the hole, your mind can't help to think to number the greatest of all, that being number 42. But being this reliant on these guys, as far as, okay, you're now starting, you need to stop potentially the MVP, that being Josh Allen, it's a tall task for the kids. At the end of the day,
it really is. But you're playing a team that just doesn't overwhelm you offensively. They just play consistent. If you watch Kansas City doesn't do a lot of great things. They just bend, but they don't break. They find a way to win. Buffalo is just a little bit more consistent. So, yeah, it's tough when you say, hey, I'm going to throw a rookie in there, and he's going to have to go play against, like you said, one of the most elite quarterbacks in this league. I tell you what, it's tough, but the 49ers have played with a lot of young guys this year, and Mustafa's been playing great the whole year, and he started this whole year. I don't think it's that. It's just the fact, can you be consistent? That's this biggest thing. You talked about this defense. You talk about where they're at defensively. Talk about if they are in total defense, number six overall. They're six against the pass. They're 11th against the run. But the consistency and where it shifts hugely is points allowed. You're number 20th. So if you have given up a lot of points and your inability to score has been the biggest differential in my opinion. So yes, it's tough to go on the road and throw a bunch of rookies in and go tell them now, go win me a ball game. But guess what? It is what it is. You're going to have to, because you've dug this hole. Now you got to find a way to dig a way out.
And anytime Nick Bosa isn't going to go, you know, we talk about Brock Purdy not being available. Now, obviously with the NFL being so quarterback centric, that's a huge blow. But Trent Williams, Nick Bosa, it's a coin toss and neither one of those guys are going to be available. But Bosa, just to stay with the defense for a moment, if you have any shot, just like any other great quarterback, you got to put some pressure, you would think, on Josh Allen. And this becomes the big concern. You know, I do Wars this week with Ev. We got a show coming up tomorrow, and we always talk about, all right, if Steph's not in the game, who's your number two? As it relates to the 49ers, I think this has been a year-long question. In fact, it's pretty much been since Bosa's arrival, is who's the other guy? And they really haven't had one, aside from going back to 2019. But when you think about, I mean, since Dee Ford's departure and Dee Ford's that first year, there has not been a bookend to Nick Bosa. And so with Bosa out, is it Leonard Floyd? Who's the guy that has to step up and put pressure on Josh Allen coming up on Sunday?
It's got to be Floyd. It really has. You brought this guy in, and you need someone to put some pressure on this quarterback. You saw last week against Green Bay. Green Bay had plenty of time back there to throw the ball, and they were able to shred him. you saw Green Bay able to run the ball, had over 150 yards total in run game, and had, you know, was able to throw the ball around the field on crucial downs. So you're going to have to put some pressure, manufacture some type of pressure. I don't think Buffalo has great receivers, so you're going to have to put some pressure. You're going to have to put a spy guy on Josh, because if you do come at Josh, you know he can hurt you with his legs because he's big, he's physical, he can run through you, run over you. So you better put pressure on him, because if not, he's going to hurt you. He can scramble. He's a big guy. So you're going to be able to cover these guys. It's like, but can you tackle? The Niners you talked about last week, when you looked at Green Bay, I think they missed 13. Some of them had 20 tackles. Some said
10
13.
In the first quarter.
When you miss that type of tackles and you're getting ready to play against the quarterback that has fun running through arm tackles, you're going to have to tackle this guy. And that's what this Niner team has to do, because offensively, you know, they're fourth in total offense. I mean, it's like when you look at the numbers really just, it doesn't show you what they're doing, because you're fourth in total offense, you're seventh in run with your rushing game, you're throwing, you know, you're averaging over 300 and some, three, four, almost close to 400 yards in total offense, over 350, and you're losing. So when you look at just the measurables, you're like, man, what the heck is going on with this team? Why hasn't translated into wins? That's because you're 20th in far as giving up runs.
When you think about Sean McDermott, the head coach of the Buffalo Bills, it's pretty simple to me. Once he puts in the game tape of the Niners against the Green Bay Packers and he sees what Josh Jacobs did, and you've got James Cook, who is maybe a tier or a step below that of Josh Jacobs. But I know Josh Allen can throw it all over the yard, and we know that he can run. But aren't you just simply doing exactly what it is that Green Bay did and run it right the hell at San Francisco and saying, prove me that you can stop us, especially in terms of between the tackles, because there's no need for us to get fancy. We're just going to go smash mouth.
Oh, without a doubt, Green Bay is going to say, show us. Green Bay already told him, hey, look, let's see if you can stop us from running. In Green Bay, they had no answer to stop Green Bay. Buffalo's going to look at this and say, okay, show us that you can stop the run. Show us that you've learned in a week, what have you been able to do? They're going to come at the Niners. They are going to run the ball. They are not going to back down. They are going to run the ball, and they're going to see if the Niners has fixed this problem.
And as you've talked about, but just to reiterate once again, the worst thing is, well, it's once you get to the second levels and you're relying on linebackers and safeties, as good as Malik Mustafa is, as good as Renardo Green can be at times, when they have to make tackles, you're in trouble. Because those guys like to be clean. Like, every linebacker does not like somebody in on his body. And so, again, it becomes about the big fellas up front in the trenches.
Whether you want to,
buy, buy, buy,
in a bear market, or
sell, sell, sell,
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
And being able to stuff guys in gaps. And if that's not happening, you're, first of all, James Cook's going to have a huge game, Josh Allen's going to have a huge game, but then you start to eat clock. And then you have, because when you're running the football and you have 10 to 12 play drives and you're out there in that weather for that long, I mean, you're pretty much done by halftime.
Yeah. It's going to be interesting to see, have the Niners fixed the problem? Have they fixed the run defense? Because what we've seen with the Niners' run defense and their inability to stop the run on a consistent basis, teams are not going to say, we're going to stop running. Oh, we're not running the ball. We're going to throw the ball. They are not. They're going to say, no, we're going to test you out and seeing what your coaching staff, seeing what this team has done, is see if you got better against the run. And right now, the Niners have not shown you that they've gotten better against the run. And that's a huge problem.
You know, we talked about Steve Tasker, and we had him on the show just moments ago. And it's funny, the Don Beebe and the Steve Tasker, that happens every year in terms of chasing down Leon Lett. For those of you
that was classic.
You guys can Google it or get into YouTube and find what it is that Don Beebe did chasing down. Oh, God, all those Buffalo Bill teams with Jim Kelly and the K-Gun and Marv Levy, 4 consecutive Super Bowls. Can you even imagine? That is just so difficult. But I just wanted to put this to you. How much? Listen, I played high school football, And I remember our coach, St. Ignatius, shout out, right here in the city, would always say, this is going to win or lose us 4 or 5 football games. We practice it at the beginning of practice, at the end of practice. When you get to the NFL level, how important is special teams, and what sort of precedence does it take when you get into practice on a daily basis?
I think special teams are unreal. I don't think...
Is that where you started your career?
Absolutely. You know, when you get drafted, most guys have to go show that they can play special teams. You have to show, hey, I can play special teams. I had to play special teams. I was on kickoff. I was on kickoff return. I played those teams, and I had to be able to do it. But I'm telling you, that is a main focal point of any team, special teams. Games are won and lost on special teams. I remember playing, and I think you remember this too, the Tennessee Titans. I'm on the Tennessee Titans every single Friday. We'd practice the home run throwback, but it was called AKA the Music City Miracle. This is what happened. Every Friday we'd go out. I would be the up back. They would probably always kick the ball to me. I would run halfway across the other side of the field. I would throw it over to either Wycheck. He'd pitch it back to Dyson. It was Mason, because Derek Mason was the guy originally. Yeah. It's 17 seconds. We're playing against the Buffalo Bills. We know that we need a miracle. We call the play. It's called home run throwback, and we said, we're doing it. We are running this play. I remember going over to Frank Wycheck. I said, they're going to kick this ball short. I know that they're coming to me. I had a fit, and I didn't tell the other guys because I wanted them to react and do the same thing that they always do. Frank and I knew. Frank knew to come up. I caught the ball. The ball's coming. It's going really, really slow. I catch the ball. I take 5-6 steps run. I pitch it back to Wycheck, him over to, you know, Dyson, because Ike Berg was number 2. Mason was number 1. Ike Berg was number 2. Kevin Dyson was the third guy that was supposed to be on there. So you're talking about the third string guys that paid attention to detail, that knew what was going to take place against Buffalo. We score that. We win the game and end up Callum pulling us to the Super Bowl. So when you're asking me how critical, how special are special teams, how important is attention to details in a football game, I'll tell you what. Go ask the Raiders how special teams are just attention to details. They have an opportunity to beat Kansas City and give Kansas City, and Buffalo's probably watching this game, give Kansas City a chance, give Buffalo to be the number 1 seed. They're playing against the Raiders. The Raiders, self-inflicted wound. We talk about those things. A false start, fumble the ball. Raiders are going to get a chip shot field goal to win by 1. They end up turning the ball over and losing the game with no time on the clock. Special teams, attention to details, that is a premium in the National Football League.
I had no idea you were on the field for that play.
Yeah, I'm the one who started it, baby. Your boy O'Neal's the one who started that.
When you pull that off.
We signed 2,000 of these pitchers that were so cool. And the thing's worth about 35, 40. Someone's offered me over 100 grand for one. It's called Music City Miracle. That play is unbelievable. They only let like me, Wycheck, and Dyson, you know, sign that thing. So yeah, you can give me a drop. That's me name dropping. So that was unbelievable.
Yeah, for the Music City Miracle.
Yes.
I remember watching that in a hotel room in Las Vegas. For any of us that remember that play or that saw it, and you can once again get on YouTube for you kids out there, one of the greatest, man. One of the greatest of all times. I mean, the reason why that stood out, because you have a lot of teams now after the play here at Cal Stanford where teams will lateral football, and it's just, you know, you start to get into this rugby style, and sometimes you'll see it in D2 highlights every year. Some team in a small college or even a big college will take it to the house. But that's more of just, I mean, it's a hot potato, and there's no real structure.
Right, structure.
You guys.
Structure.
Like, that was planned, premeditated. I mean, one of the greatest special teams play, I think, in the history of the league.
It was, but those are the things that we had Tasker on, and those are the things that you just alluded to, the ability to know what's going on, for everyone buying in. He talked about the importance of special teams, where guys, leaders on that team, Wycheck. Hall, you know, a great tight end, rest in peace, a great brother of mine, Frank Wycheck, you know, he's gone too soon, but he's a starting tight end, a Pro Bowl type of tight end, year in and year out. You had myself, you had starters on that kickoff return team because it Benji Olsen, another offensive lineman that started. We had guys
University of Washington?
Yes. And guys on that team, on that special teams, that were starters in this league because special teams meant something to you. And it has to mean something to the 49ers, and it will have to mean something to them, especially on Sunday. You're playing in prime time. Special teams is going to be huge, and that's why I love we had Tasker on earlier today.
Yeah, one more thing, and then we'll get off of special teams. But how much of it is, as you talked about, you're a player that, whether you're a young player that's trying to make the 53-man, and so special teams oftentimes is that avenue to do it, but it's just a springboard for me to be that wide out or be that extra running back or get into the depth chart of whatever the position might be. As opposed to just buying in, saying, I'm a special teams player like that of Tasker. I'm going to Pro Bowls. This is what I do. Could there be some conflict because some players see it as just, this is an opportunity for me to springboard to whatever position it is that I want to be on this on the roster of an NFL football team?
I think that some players just get it. They have buy-in and they know, hey, look, I am not going to stay in the league long if I can't play special teams. You look, there was a guy who played for the 49ers but played with me for 6 years. I played together with this guy and ended up playing for 15 years. Kasim Osgood, special teams guru, kind of like a Tasker guy. You can look him up. Called him today because I wanted to talk about special teams. How did he last that long, Kasim Osgood? I was done playing, and Kasim was still playing in year 14. I called Jim Harbaugh, and I say, look, you're coming here. Here's a guy that you should probably bring to your team. I'm telling you, because what he brings to the table, he's older, a little long in the tooth, but he is going to hustle and he's going to do those things for you. Who do you think Jim brought in? He brought in Kasim Osgood, played with him with the Niners. He put him on that team because he wanted a guy that was going to show the young guys how important special teams are and how important special teams can come down to. So he went out and got a guy that was probably past his prime, but he brought him to the Niners because of special teams.
We can't talk about special teams in the San Francisco 49ers without shouting out Tabor Pepper.
Oh, you went back. Peps was good. But when you talk about just the durability of Kasim Osgood, how long he played, even though it wasn't long for the Niners, but he was Tasker-ness. That guy went to five Pro Bowls doing special teams.
Tabor Pepper, of course, is the guy who got into it, got slapped, got accosted by one Debo Samuel on the sidelines. How often do you see a long snapper in the history of the NFL get his 15 minutes? But hey, shout out to the dude.
And he stood up to Debo. You know, David Ben played. My brother David.
But
Ben,
it's sort of to your point that hey, this is special teams, man. If you come at him, you're coming at all of us.
Exactly. And the long snapper, he stood up for his punter. I mean, stood up for his field goal kicker. Say, look, get out. Don't talk to my guy. Debo kind of gave him to Debo. You want your cornbread. But that should have never happened. But, you know, guys in the heat of the moment, things like this happen. But it just goes to show you, there is a huge onus that has to be put on special teams.
I tell you what, if there's any way that Tabor Pepper would go after Debo Samuel after he missed that pass for the interception last week against Green Bay, I wouldn't be here with you right now. I'd be in ER somewhere at San Francisco General because I'd be laughing so damn hard that Tabor Pepper went up to Debo Samuel and said, hey, man, we can't have that happen. But that's what happens when you're Debo Samuel and you want to point fingers and you're a captain. You can't be doing that.
The following week, look at what happens to you. And that's the thing, because the thing about it, no one wants to play bad and no one wants to, you know, be pointed at and made a mockery of, or people come down your throat or come down your lane. And that's what Debo has to realize. And he did it, you know, tongue in cheek, because he's like, hey, man, make the kick. You know, they want to win. They're in a tough situation. They're trying to turn their season around. They needed to get that win. He made the last field goal. He didn't miss any more after that. But you have to realize when you do that, now the microphone and the magnifying glass is on you. Oh, what's the saying? You point one finger, there's two pointing back at you. So you got to see that. And then the following week, you see Debo didn't have the game and people are pointing the finger. So you just have to be careful, because you're never going to play perfect and you're never going to be the best. So just understand it comes with the territory.
All right, when we come back, we'll get back to the 49ers. I do want to take a look at their next opponent as we get ahead of ourselves after Buffalo, that being the Chicago Bears. What happened to them yesterday, and of course their head coach Matt Eberflus now in the unemployment.
Oh, wow. That's
He's unemployed, my man. Carter Chickering.
Wow, Carter.
No mercy.
Wow.
This segment was sponsored by the all-new Honda of Vallejo. We continue. Let's talk about the Chicago Bears. And come on, man. You can't use those timeouts once the game's over. We'll break it all down for you. It's Low. It's Dan Avone here on 95.7 The Game.